From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm John Gatto. Going from a contentious election cycle to a situation where political leaders are at loggerheads over solutions to the pending fiscal cliff may make it seem like there's just no hope for a civil political debate ever again in America. But religious leaders in Wisconsin have pledged to improve public discourse through what they call a season of civility. Wisconsin Council of Churches Ambassador Helene Nelson addressed the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area about that idea this week. Nelson, along with Viterbo University's Director of the Servant Leadership Program, Tom Thibodeau, talked with Wisconsin Public Radio's Maureen McCollum about this idea of civility and what it means.
The call from the state's religious leaders for a season of civility focused on the principles that are common in religious traditions that we treat our neighbor as we wish to be treated.
The Golden Rule.
The Golden Rule, which exists across religious traditions, and this statement was signed by people who are Christian and non-Christian religious leaders alike. So the notion that we respect one another, in Christian terms, there's a quote from Paul, "Speak the truth in love." Civility doesn't mean just being nice to each other or compromising our deep convictions, but listening to each other and trying to find the common good beyond the discussions of how, being open to working together to create the common good in a respectful way.
And it sounds so easy, but it's not.
Absolutely. I would say not simple. It's basic, but challenging, and especially in the political climate we faced, which is why the religious leaders spoke out, that people within congregations or within society have become less civil. And the environment is knocking us off our best selves' feet.
And Tom Thibodeau, when I had called you to see if you were interested in this discussion, I believe on my message you said, there's nothing more you like talking about than civility. Why is that?
Because I deeply believe that we create our lives, our families, our communities, our neighborhoods, our city, our state, our world, by the conversations that we have. Conversations shape the environment. In healthy organizations, healthy families, healthy relationships, people talk with each other. In unhealthy situations, people talk about each other. We've known this. This is in our language. The word gossip, for instance, comes from two Anglo-Saxon words, God and sibling. If we do it well, it's our God talk about our brothers and sisters. If we do it well, we build the community up. So when I speak well about Helene, it's not just about Helene, it's about all the people who know Helene, and it honors the work that she does. That builds up the community. If I speak poorly about Helene and if I attack Helene, it's not a personal attack, only an affront to herself, but to her friends, families, and people that know her, and denigrates her work. So the importance of conversation is a turning towards each other. That's what it literally means. Many of us in our homes have conversation pieces where we turn towards that piece that draws our attention, pulls us together. Well, that's the same thing that happens in all of our relationships. The opposite of conversation is aversion, in terms of turning away, being pulled apart. And when that happens, you have levels of isolation, alienation, and I think it really breeds levels of fear and violence. So how is it that we come together and have these conversations in the public square that benefit everyone? That becomes very important.
And Helene, you're nodding your head.
Well, we're on the same page here, and I'm looking forward to the time together here. I think you can talk about this as principles of civics 101 and democracy, too. You know, our founders did not imagine in the Constitution that we would agree with each other. You know, they said, you know, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union with liberty and justice for all, create this Constitution. And they went ahead and created a Constitution that held the opportunity for people to express different views and to work them through in a process. The balance of powers among the bodies, among other things, the rights of the minority guaranteed while the majority rule, all those things. So it's principles of our democracy that we're trying to hold on to also. But the question is, how do we as citizens participate? And I absolutely agree with Tom that these habits of working together for good, trying to figure things out together for the common good by talking with each other, not about each other, by listening hard, even when we disagree, and not demonizing each other, but being open and creative about even maybe changing your mind. Those things are essential, whether it's our families or whether it's our schools or our churches or any community life we have together. So this isn't just wanting Republicans and Democrats in Washington, D.C. to solve the fiscal cliff, which we do, but it is about how we relate at a very basic level. So we start with ourselves. You know, we start with how we relate, and then we think about how we create an ecology of community that supports that way of relationship more broadly.
I'm wondering if we maybe should just jump into the season of civility. Can you talk about why that was initiated?
In early 2011, when our state sort of blew up politically over budget proposals, and there was just harsh polarization going on, the Council of Churches, board, and staff worked together to craft a very nice little booklet called Faith and Facts, which tried to acknowledge political polarization, to say that people of goodwill and faith seeking the common good can disagree about the best means to get it, and that churches should be safe places to talk about important policy issues of common good. And we posed some facts about the budget, some scripture and faith information, and then questions that were very open-ended for reflection. And fair to say that didn't actually work out, because churches, like the state as a whole, were divided, and talking about that stuff was just too hard. And that kind of opened our eyes that that was not helpful. So we realized we needed to turn a little to the idea of how we talk and not what we talk about. And we talked with Parker Palmer, whose book, Healing the Heart of Democracy, just came out. And Parker was very helpful in saying, you need to work on civility and recreating the opportunity for people to believe that we're in this together, that we need to listen to each other, that we need to relearn these habits and practice these skills of connecting in common cause, because all the good little accurate facts, scripture quotes, and open-ended questions in the world won't create that if you don't have it. So that kicked off the season of civility. And the religious leaders felt extremely strongly that what was going on in our state was a violation of our religious professions. So they issued the call. They've done training in creating bodies, or what they call healing democracy action circles in congregations, where people in congregations are going to re-enter this space and practice these habits of ways of relating. And they've been speaking out about it. There are more steps ahead, but that's the backstory and where we have come so far.
And Tom Thibodeau, why is it up to religious leaders to initiate conversations like this?
I think it's up to all leaders from every level of the spectrum, that as fellow citizens that we have to be careful as to how we shape our communities. As leaders, all of us have that opportunity to inspire and influence the lives of other people through our words and our presence. For the last 4 years, I've been traveling the state with a friend of mine, Dr. Richard Pieper out of Milwaukee, hosting conversations on servant leadership in Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, Fond du Lac, La Crosse. And just bringing people together from every different walk of life and every different institution to talk about our ability to serve and lead in our communities. Recognizing that if we have servant-led institutions, we'll have servant-led communities. We have servant-led communities, we have a servant-led state. But that's by getting to know each other, trusting each other, knowing each other's story well prevents us from doing harm towards each other, and then calling ourselves to a good greater than ourselves. There's that real difference between being self-serving in the conversations that I want to have and to be a servant leader. So in every organization and every institution today, they're having very crucial conversations about human need, resources, accountability, standards, evaluation, and changing markets and communities. Well, this is the important role of leadership. I think right now Lincoln has captured the imagination of the American people again. And I think what I was astounded by, watching the movie, is how carefully he chose his words and how important it was for him as a leader to bring together divisive elements, probably the greatest divide we've ever had,
But all he had was his words. Certainly there was a military victory, but all the things that had to happen for the country to come together. And then it says in the second inaugural, with malice towards none. That politics shouldn't be about winning and losing exclusively. Politics has to be about leadership. And what's leadership? Bringing people from different perspectives together to work together. And so I think citizens now are going to start to demand this of our leaders at every level of every organization, whether it be religious, business, healthcare, education.
And that's one thing, even talking with people before and after the elections, one of the number one issues that people brought up was that they'd like to see every side getting along better. But I don't know if we're seeing that yet.
You know, I think that this is long haul work. And, you know, one thing that's obvious is that people elected a divided government in Washington, D.C., and people want government solving our problems. So just factually, that seems to be what people expect. And you see, right after the election, there were a lot of the right words said by leaders on both sides about that expectation. At the same time, people are debating policy differences that matter to them. And it's yet to be seen whether they will actually come to compromises or, even better than compromise, find solutions that are better than either side's ideas. You know, Tom was talking about the role of many people creating this kind of environment. And there's two things I'd like to say about that. One of them is we shouldn't just think about politics in Washington, D.C. This is something that we can create in our own homes and communities. And I believe firmly here in La Crosse, the people of La Crosse, whether it's your school board and schools, your city hall, or your churches, or any way and place that people gather are places you can create that kind of process. And secondly, that contributes to the greater good over time, and we can hold our leaders accountable. And I was very encouraged that there are Democrats and Republicans from outside the Washington, D.C. beltline who are going to our leaders and demanding them, including CEOs of big corporations, you know, saying to the Republicans, you have to look at taxes, and to the Democrats, you have to look at spending, and we have to look at all of it as we think about how to make our government make good decisions for the long-haul economy. So I'm encouraged when people stand up for what they believe in, band together with others, and try and keep at it.
Well, and which is what the Season of Civility aimed to do. I mean, you have a number of religious leaders from across the state, and this is Christian, Muslim, Jewish, Baha'i. I mean, there is almost representation from every single faith. Does it start with religion? And have those leaders, has it made any sort of difference from what you can tell? Maybe if talking with their own local leaders?
I think everybody starts where they are. And Tom was talking about the opportunity people have to be servant leaders in their own organization. And I bet he would agree with me that leaders aren't necessarily the top bosses always. That lots of people can lead, and you can think about what's my part. You know, and churches and church leaders are saying, one reason I so admire this statement is they not only clearly and simply articulate the value, the next thing they do is pledge their own behavior. They pledge they will respectfully listen and model this behavior. They pledge they will be open to changing their mind without abandoning their deep principles. And then they go on and say, and our congregations should be places where our preaching and teaching supports people having civil conversations. So they're looking at where they are, where they live. Doesn't mean that that's the only route. In fact, many people can contribute to this. But I'm encouraged. I feel that they made a difference, and they're starting to make a difference. But, you know, this is an ongoing work.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guests today are Helene Nelson. She's a volunteer ambassador with the Wisconsin Council of Churches, which is spearheading the Season of Civility program, and Tom Thibodeau. He's the director of the Servant Leadership Program at Viterbo University. Tom, I mean, does it make a difference? I mean, we also heard stories during the election about religious leaders who were encouraging their congregations almost on the opposite end to, you know, vote for based on certain principles or on certain issues, or I'm not sure if any certain congregation took it to actual lawmakers themselves, but I mean, does it make a difference with religious leaders? Will it make a difference on their congregation, whether taking it in the civil route or who to vote for?
Well, in all of leadership, it makes a difference, the way in which you speak to people, and particularly the way in which you listen to people and then respond to their deepest held needs. There's a public trust that goes with being given the privilege of serving and leading. And it is a privilege to serve and to lead. And certainly some people use that to their own advantage in every organization, to manipulate or to dominate. But the most important power that each of us has is a power of integrity. That means to speak the truth with love. And the power to nurture the life of individuals and communities. And that's the great gift of that's for teaching and servant leadership. How do you build healthy organizations, healthy communities, so that people can be healthy? This is very significant. I believe in the power of churches to influence people's lives. But most of us spend 66% of our adult lives in the workplace. I'll give an example. Think about how conscious, deliberate, and intentional you are in holding respectful conversations on public radio in order to maintain the public trust. And that same thing should be held for our journalists, same thing should be held for attorneys at law, same thing should be held for teachers and professors and ministers and mothers and fathers and neighbors.
There's a lot of work to do when it comes to this. And I mean, at what point do you want to take it? Do you want more religious leaders to sign on to the season of civility? I mean, where does this go from here?
Well, the Wisconsin Council of Churches season of civility call was issued by the religious leaders last May. Since then, using the methods and ideas of Parker Palmer, who wrote a really great book called Healing the Heart of Democracy, they've developed a sort of Healing Democracy Action Circles guide, which allows small groups of people within congregations or in other settings to have these conversations where they actually, it's like any other skill or new habit you want to learn. You have to think about it, and then you have to practice it, and you have to practice it again. And it creates opportunities for practice together. And initially, they were offered as a resource to congregational leaders. 400 leaders from around, pastors and lay leaders of individual congregations were trained. About 100 different congregations were represented. Some of them have put that into work. I heard yesterday, I went to the annual meeting of the WCC, and I heard some good early results. But we also were having a lot of conversation exactly about that question, where do we go from here? What worked? What didn't? Mm-hmm. And some of it is a ground-up process. You know, this listening process that Tom has been talking about, being with, not preaching at. Process is by its nature better when it's in small groups and people engage and you build out. So some of that is going to happen, I assume, on a greater scale in the future. But I hope also that there's a sustained teaching from credible leaders in many sectors, including churches. And today I was talking to the League of Women Voters, and you know, they've been working to make our democracy succeed for a really, really long time as a nonpartisan organization trying to encourage informed citizen participation. I think they're a logical partner for non-religious but similarly value-rooted activities to try and promote healthy democracy. And vigorous debate of issues is part of it. No one's saying you should give up what you believe. We're talking about how do we work together to make good happen, knowing that people have different opinions.
Do you feel ever like the people who are participating in these conversations about civility aren't necessarily the people who, I don't want to say need it, but maybe they are more civil in nature?
It is easy to become discouraged in this work for more than one reason, including that reason, which is to say that a lot of people want us to be more civil and feel almost despair about big money politics and, you know, negative ads screaming at us on the TV and calls from machines during our dinner hour telling us untruths in unpleasant ways and all the things that go on, and we feel alienated from politics. But I would say a couple of things. One of them is that I believe most people, regular people, would rather have a life that worked for them and their neighbors. And how do we solve this alienation from politics? You know, if people get cynical, disillusioned, and withdraw, what we have is a self-fulfilling prophecy. which is you won't have a government that represents your better self and the people who care for this to be different. So, you know, how do we participate in ways that have integrity, recognizing that there are people who are going to behave in ways we don't like and systems and processes that go on that we don't like? And Parker Palmer talks about what he calls the tragic gap between the way things actually are and the way we'd like them to be. And he says we each have to find our mission in that gap. How are we causing it to be better? And there's hope in it to me that in our churches or other congregations, in our schools, in our communities, in our families, all the things that Tom talked about, workplaces, we all have some leverage in this. And we can look, if we do have access to politics, to band together with like-minded people to try and hold our political leaders to account. We do it because it's the right thing to do, but I would also actually suggest that it's the only thing that can maybe work. Because what's really obvious from brain science is that yelling at people to change their mind or telling them they're stupid does not work.
And I'm wondering, Tom, if you can talk about, I mean, is there a how-to manual and how to be a civil leader? I mean, what do you teach the future leaders that you work with on how to be civil?
What I try to teach is a great deal of self-reflection and contemplation, helping people to understand what is it that you know, what is it that you believe, so that you can have an honest dialogue with someone, particularly who comes from another perspective. I'm much less defensive if I can be open to what another person has to say, particularly if they come from a different point of view. But that means that I've had to do my own preparation and understand what the issues are. What is at stake here? What are the consequences of the decisions that we're going to make? This is the difficult stuff of leadership. Now, one of the things that's very interesting to me is this. We don't teach leadership. Most colleges, most universities have in their mission statement, we want to prepare people for lives of service and leadership for the common good. You'll find this at public and private institutions. And then you ask them, well, do you have classes on leadership that everybody has to take? Well, no. So it's like this. We want everybody to learn math. We're not going to teach any classes in math, but if you could pick something along the way, that would be great. Well, the same thing that has to take place in terms of having crucial conversations with other people, particularly people from different parts of the world or different parts of our community, there's a level of discipline and study and reflection that has to take place. You're not a leader just because you're elected. You're not a leader just because you're put into a position of authority. You're a leader if you are able to serve the legitimate needs of other people and really to help to get things done for the majority of people. And it's being committed to goodness in that way. So a leader is one that understands that this is a virtue, something that needs to be practiced in every conversation, every day of my life. Not just in public. So the personal and the public begin to inform the political. And we live within that tension. I can only learn this if I study this with other individuals. I can't learn this on my own. I mean, you think about it. If you watch people in public office, do you go to school to become president? No, all of a sudden you find it. You have to learn what it is, much like all of us have to learn on the job. Well, that's the same thing when you're placed in a position of leadership. You have to learn how to lead, and you never get there. So you constantly have to be engaged with people who not tell you what you want to hear, but who are willing to risk to tell you the truth. So that's really a question for people in leadership. Who is it that you will listen to who will tell you the truth about yourself?
It was kind of strange to me right around Thanksgiving where I was coming across all these articles about how to deal with your difficult family during the holidays. And it seemed like that was popping up more than I had ever noticed before. Do you have words of advice to give to people? I mean, do you think that's just a byproduct of all this unrest going on in the country or in the world?
I think there's a high level of anxiety, which therefore makes it more incumbent upon each of us to be hospitable at our own tables, in our own homes, to tell stories that remind us of how good we are and how important we are in each other's lives. Sometimes we just forget. We become distracted. And again, that's what happens when you have fruitful conversation. It reminds us of our better selves. It reminds us of what is possible. It reminds us that we've had problems and difficulties in the past, we've overcome them before. We will move forward now. I mean, I think it'd be helpful for us all to remember at this time when we think about the fiscal cliff that all of our great-grandparents lived through the Great Depression, in which for years they stood in line for lard and for wheat, and they made sure that the neighbors had enough. Are we not capable of the people who have given us life to become the same people that they were in building up the common good, trusting in each other, trusting in strangers, if you will? So I think that's where family has that opportunity, is to remind each other of our goodness.
That's Tom Thibodeau. He's the director of Etobicoke University's Servant Leadership Program. He was part of a conversation with Wisconsin Council of Churches Ambassador Helene Nelson and Wisconsin Public Radio's Maureen McCollum discussing the concept of civility. Religious leaders in Wisconsin have pledged to encourage more civility in society through a season of civility. Nelson was in La Crosse to address the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. Our production team includes Maureen McCollum, Steve Rysom, Mary Meehan Stroob, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website, wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have suggestions for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more can be found online at wpr.org/lacrosse. On the next Newsmakers, we'll talk with two of the La Crosse area's leading philanthropists about giving.
It's not a choice, it's a responsibility. I mean, people with wealth, and you can measure wealth from somebody that has $100,000 in the bank or $10 million, but, you know, I think we have a responsibility to give a share of that back.
That's next time on Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse.